to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, and Cynthia McClure is your trusty engineer. Dennis Hart is right around the corner with a summary of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune, and later you'll hear from some of the distinguished citizens of central Iowa, including poet-author Dennis Malsby, George Blitzos, chair of the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery, and Mary Rankin, Ames and Iowa State University's sustainability director, along with some dedicated students who are working with her. As always, you'll learn something, as I always do on this show, and lots to think about. Stay with us. Especially because I want to discuss my favorite topic with you, my favorite radio topic, that is. It's the Wild Ones. I want to tell you about two things from last week. First, I was going for a walk at Ada Hayden Park for an evening walk. It was around dusk. It was one of those days when the weather was really pleasant and warm, right? And I was on a sidewalk that ran between the big lake and this kind of pond-like, wet-like, wetland area on the other side of the sidewalk. And the sidewalk was full of frogs who were traveling from the small pond to the big lake. And they were everywhere. And they were all intently hopping towards the big lake. So they looked like leopard frogs. They had spots on them, but seemed a bit small for leopard frogs. So later on, I asked KHOI environmental reporter Pat Schlarbaum if these were baby frogs that had just been born and were like now, you know, had come out of their tadpole stage. And he said, no, they were probably teenagers. They were probably a year old. And they were spending the winter in the smaller pond and had just kind of woken up now and were going back to the big pond for more activity. And they're not sleeping, he said. They're just kind of going to something he called terpor, which is kind of a slow state of activity, kind of, kind of half sleep. Maybe they have beautiful dreams. And that's how they spent the winter in the little pond. And now they're heading back to the action in the big lake. So I'm going to ask Pat to do a segment on exactly what's going on with frogs at this time of the year. And if you walk at dusk in Ada Hayden Park, watch your step. There's lots of frogs that are out migrating across the sidewalk. The second thing I want to tell you about real quickly is the Canada geese. My father, who works at Iowa State at the Ames Lab, he came home and he told me there's two geese that have moved into the Ames Lab chemistry building, kind of Iowa State parking lot. And I said, what are they doing? And he says they're just walking around the parking lot and they're sitting on cars. So I didn't quite believe him, so I went to look. And in fact, yes, there was one Canada goose sitting under the tree, and there was another one walking around the parking lot. And so I asked Pat again, so what are those geese actually doing? And he says, well, they apparently are planning to build a nest there, and they're checking out the territory and making sure that it really belongs to them. So I don't know why they found the parking lot so appealing. It seems kind of barren to me, but it's quiet, and he said there's no other geese around, which is, I guess, what they're looking for. So hats off to the Canada geese who raise their babies in a parking lot. Here's Dennis Hart with the local news.
Thanks very much, and thanks for having me back on this Friday. Let's begin by going back to last Friday, when word came that a 47-year-old man convicted decades ago of killing a 20-year-old woman in Ames will be eligible for parole in another 11 years. Ruben Deasis was originally sentenced to life in prison in the killing of Jennifer Gardner, but a state Supreme Court decision 3 years ago said sentencing a juvenile to life in prison is speculative and does not consider whether the juvenile can be rehabilitated. So a Story County judge resentenced Deasis to 40 years in prison with credit for time he's already served. Last Saturday brought word about three people from the Student Global AIDS Campaign who spoke on Friday at Iowa State University about their fight against the HIV/AIDS pandemic. One was from South Carolina, one from South Africa, and the third was from Zimbabwe. All shared their stories about being HIV positive and how their diagnosis fueled their activism and advocacy. Also Saturday, word that Beverly Crumple was announced as the recipient of the third annual Making Democracy Work Award by the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. She spent 20 years as an educator, then got involved with a United Methodist congregation located within the walls of the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women in Marshalltown. She's also logged 900 hours of service to patients of the Israel Family Hospice House and worked with the Ames Area Refugee Alliance, along with serving on the County Compensation Board for the Story County Board of Supervisors. Grumpel will receive her award from the League of Women Voters at a luncheon tomorrow morning. There was more last Saturday, including a preview of this week's Ames celebration of the First Amendment. It was hosted by the Greenlee School of Journalism at Iowa State University, and it's the longest-running continual First Amendment celebration at any American university. Programs during the week were said to be tailored to spark dialogue on one or more of the five freedoms guaranteed by the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution: freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, the right to assemble peacefully, and the right to petition the government. And one more note from Saturday, this one from Nevada, where a story reported that the city has gone from being a two-funeral hometown to one. The man who bought the Bacon Funeral Home 3 years ago has now also purchased the Ryan Funeral Home. Justin Rasmussen now plans to consolidate the homes, which will have a new name, the Rasmussen Ryan Funeral Home. Sunday brought word of the fire that destroyed a popular ice cream shop in Slater on Saturday. Kohl's had become an iconic stop for politicians and for residents across Iowa, and it had been featured in several publications and covered by area TV stations. Firefighters from Huxley, Cambridge, and Kelly assisted the Slater Fire Department, but the building was a total loss. Owner David Sturdy said the fire started after he got a smoker started outside. That smoker went up, caught a nearby shed on fire, and the fire then spread to the main building. Also Sunday, a long story about campus town business owners in Ames who are not happy that parking spaces have been removed along Welch Avenue. The story came 2 weeks after the Ames City Council heard concerns from a business owner who had brought a petition with the names of 700 people on it, all against the removal of parking. Mayor John Haley said the council is not reconsidering its choice of reducing parking on the street. Earlier, the council had voted to eliminate 14 east side parking spaces on the 100 and 200 blocks of Welch to make way for concrete planters. And design plans have been approved to replace parking with wider sidewalks and bike lanes that would eliminate parking on the block of Welch between Chamberlain Avenue and Lincoln Way. And Sunday also brought word about the 3,000 Iowa State University students who had taken part in the 23rd annual Ames Polar Bear Plunge. They had jumped into frigid water in an above-ground pool at the Student Learning Center parking lot, all in support of Special Olympics Iowa. It's the biggest single fundraising event that Special Olympics Iowa holds. Tuesday brought word that members of the Westboro Baptist Church made their first appearance in Ames in nearly a decade on Monday and came equipped with signs inscribed with inflammatory language and threats of damnation. The response from the Ames community, from parents to high school students to college students, was a message of love and unity. Westboro Baptist was founded in Kansas and has gained notoriety for picketing at the funerals of military members who were killed in action. It has received widespread criticism for its use of hate speech. Westboro protesters showed up at Ames High, where community members turned out with signs and flags of their own. Other Westboro protesters showed up at Iowa State University and were greeted by counter-protesters comprised of Iowa State students and Ames residents. Also Tuesday, a report about Monday night's Ames School Board meeting, where members thanked the community for showing up earlier that day to support the high school against the Westboro Church protesters. Board members also talked about a new summer school program, which has the slogan, Empower, Enrich, and Excel. 64 classes will be offered in art, business, and in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Tuesday also brought word that in the wake of the fire that destroyed Kohl's ice cream in Slater, community members have flocked to help owner Dave Sturdy rebuild. Sturdy called the community support incredible and said that volunteers turned out immediately after the fire to help clean up. He said others are making donations in the form of drywall and electrical equipment. Sturdy plans to consult with a contractor in the coming weeks and estimated that efforts to rebuild his shop could start in a month. One more note from Tuesday, a preview story about how Iowa State University College of Design students were preparing to walk down the runway presenting wearable art and design projects during the Wearables Design Show on Wednesday. The show was set to showcase about 50 modular mobile creations by more than 200 first-year core design program students who were working in teams of 4 to 6 people. The event was part of the College of Design's first Design Week, celebrating the college's 40th anniversary. On Wednesday, resignations made big news. Ames High School principal Spence Evans announced he's resigning to take a job as a high school principal in the community of Tipton in eastern Iowa. Evans had been principal at Ames High for 9 years. He said he believes relationships with family are important and that the Tipton job would allow his wife and him to continue growing that relationship. Their 3 children are students at the University of Iowa, and Tipton is 20 miles from there. About a year ago, Evans was a finalist for the superintendent's position in the Washington Community School District in southeast Iowa, but he did not get that job. His last day at Ames High will be June 30th, and the district intends to have a new principal on board when the new school year starts in the fall. There was another resignation reported on Wednesday. Story County Board of Supervisors Chair Loris Olson stepped down as chair, a move announced at Tuesday's meeting. Vice Chair Linda Merkin took the chair position. Olson said she will remain a supervisor. She said she received medical news that prompted her decision to step down as chair, adding that it's common knowledge she has diabetes and that her previous duties made it difficult to keep her body as healthy as she'd like. Merkin was sworn into her first term as a supervisor 3 months ago. She said she still has much to learn about the county. Also Tuesday, the supervisors agreed to direct county staff to explore the possibility of adding a roundabout or traffic circle at the intersection of Cameron Road and George Washington Carver. This after a traffic study indicated that the number of vehicles there would increase by the year 2034. There also are concerns about visibility in that area. The cost for a roundabout is estimated at about $700,000. One more note from the supervisors' meeting. The supervisors voted to appeal the Iowa District Court's dismissal of a case against the Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park on East 190th Street. That case involved citations against the park, accusing the park of exceeding the number of permitted homes and failing to secure necessary permits. Yesterday, Thursday, brought word that the Ames City Council received an update on the Healthy Life Center project this past week. City staff gave the council a nearly $6 million project reduction option that would cut the construction cost from $50.5 million to about $45 million. The council also directed staff to prepare language for a future bond referendum that is estimated to be between $24 million and $30 million, the value of which will be contingent on future decisions regarding cost-cutting options for the Healthy Life Center. The council is looking at a possible bond issue vote in August, and for that to happen, decisions have to be finalized by May 14th. The project's private fundraising campaign fell $12 million short of its $18 million goal. In a separate matter at the council meeting, the third reading of the ordinance to increase city water rates was read and adopted. The 7% hike will become effective July 1st. Also yesterday, there was a report that the Ballard School Board has moved forward with middle school renovations, with improvements to the entrances at the district's two elementary schools, and with upgrades to the district's athletic stadium. All this coming about 4 months after voters approved a nearly $20 million bond issue to fund the improvements. That bond issue passed with more than 73% voter approval. The Ballard District includes Huxley, Slater, Kelly, and Cambridge. 1,750 students are enrolled in Ballard schools this year. One more note from yesterday, a report on the ribbon-cutting ceremony that took place Wednesday in honor of Barilla's expansion at its pasta processing plant in Ames. That expansion includes more space in the rail yard, two new production lines, and six new silos to store wheat. Governor Kim Reynolds was on hand for the ceremony, calling Barilla, in her words, a great example of one of those innovative companies that are really playing a big role in our economy. Ames Mayor John Hala said he's proud of the city's partnership with Barilla over the past 21 years and pleased with its impact on the community workforce. The expansion lets Barilla add 41 new positions to its current team of 214 employees. The company, which is based in Italy, opened its Ames plant in 1998, making it the first Barilla manufacturing plant in the United States. And there it is, your summary of the past week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, taking the weekend off, but never fear, I'll be right back here in this very seat come Monday when I'll report on news from around Iowa. Until then, stay safe and healthy and have a great weekend.
Viento que viene de la montaña, viento, tráenos la claridad. Viento que viene de la montaña, viento, tráenos la claridad.
Dani Treuberg with 400. And this is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for being with us. And thank you, Mr. Dennis Hart, for the news of this, the summary of local news. Next Thursday, April 18th, you are invited to a book release party at KHOI. We're excited to host Ames poet and author Dennis Malsby, who will read from his newly released book in our station. There will be refreshments, and Mr. Malsby will be signing books afterwards and selling them. And he tells me that some of the proceeds will go to KHOI. He's donating some of them to KHOI. We are starting our fund drive for KHOI on the 15th of April. So we will be at the beginning of the fund drive. So thank you, Dennis, for that. And I'm not going to tell you more about the book right now because Dennis himself is here, and he can do that much better than I. Welcome, Mr. Malsby. We're very happy and excited to be hosting this book party and to be part of the release of this book, and that you chose KHOI for the location. I will write real briefly what is written on your flyer to introduce it. And it, the book is called Winter Set, and a short story of pixies, demons, and fiends. The Irish-born Father Donahey has retired from many years of service as a Catholic priest in South American countries to Winterset, Iowa. It's not to be the life of books and long rural walks that he expects. The community and the surrounding area are awash with supernatural creatures. Some are friendly, some not, but all must be dealt with in order to protect his new parish and the wider world from chaos and destruction. That's quite it. So you're bringing together Little Winterset, Iowa, the priesthood and the wide, wide world of the supernatural in this book. And from the description, it sounded to me kind of, it invoked, because this is clearly focused on Irish culture, I was picturing leprechauns and, something kind of like little fairy stories. But this is not quite that. I'm about halfway through the book. It is a page-turner. And it's a little bit darker than that. So welcome, Mr. Malsby. Tell us about this book.
Thank you, Ursula. It's a pleasure to be here. The book is what they call linked short stories.
Linked short stories.
And it's not quite a novel, but each of the stories is tied together. And basically it's tied together by the protagonist, Father Donahey.
Mm-hmm. He's a priest.
Yes. And each of the stories also features a different mythological creature, paranormal creature,
so
that he has to deal with.
So a question I had about these creatures, I've encountered a few of them because, like I said, I'm about halfway through the book. Are these creatures of your imagination, or are you actually drawing from traditional mythology from the Irish culture?
They're traditional, but not exclusively Irish. What I did was I took a look at the census data for Winterset in Madison County and took a look where the original immigrants had come from. And, of course, there were quite a few Irish. Mm-hmm. So we've got Irish paranormal creatures. We've got a pooka, which mm-hmm. in case people don't know what that is, that's a shape-shifting Irish demon.
Yeah. But he likes to be a big black horse,
yes,
right?
And the traditional story is that if you're coming home from the pub at night and you're a little tipsy, that this black demonic horse will scoop you up on its back and take you for a wild ride through the cornfields. So it's mischievous as well as demonic.
Uh-huh. And he's got a fire coming out of his nostrils.
Yeah. We also have a leprechaun. Taking a look at the other immigrant groups, like there was a large group of Norwegian immigrants that came into the county. So we have a troll, of course. And trolls really like Madison County. I mean, look at all the covered bridges there they can get
under. That's right.
You know, so.
This is the Winterset made famous by Bridges of Madison County
right.
movie, mm-hmm. which is just south of Des Moines, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think people also know it as the birthplace of John Wayne. They have a
That's
John
right.
Wayne museum there,
mm-hmm.
which the paranormal people really like. They're fans of John Wayne.
Of course.
But I went through, there's a Chinese farmer, so his daughter visiting the old country brings back a Chinese demon that has to be exorcised. There's people from other countries that, for example, the hospital has a couple of doctors from India. And so the Hindu mythology is brought in in one of the stories.
So with all of these, are these actually taken from historical figures or Did you make any of these up?
No, these are all taken from the historical figures. Mm-hmm. So the
research must have been kind of exciting.
It was really fun, and it was difficult to choose because every culture has multitudes of these paranormal creatures. You know,
and they're all collecting in Madison County.
Well, a number of them.
And so talk a little bit about Father Donahue. Like, who is he to you?
Well, I tried to find someone that would kind of be in the center of things, that would have good communication, so the information would flow to him, and somebody that had already been kind of prepped for this. The theory is that Father Donahue is ready to retire, and the church hierarchy says, well, you know, here's all these little parishes we have that could use a part-time priest.
He's looking for some rest and relaxation.
And so he
wants to catch up on his
Iowa
reading, right?
It resembles his original village in Ireland, which is no more. Uh-huh. The village is, you know, gone to dust. But it's not – he thinks he picked it. But he's actually, the invisible hands have moved him to Winterset because he's needed there. Mm-hmm. And he, of course, does take part in the church confessional. So he gets to hear some really hair-raising stories through the confessional.
Mm-hmm.
And then people come to him for help. So the leprechaun story, people that have a winery right outside of Winterset capture they're having trouble. Something is stealing their wine. Well, they put up a little cage thinking they have an animal there, and they catch a leprechaun. So, of course, they go to Father Donahue.
Expecting
and say,
a raccoon.
Yeah. They think it's a raccoon or something, but it's actually a leprechaun. So they go to Father Donahue and say, hey, come out. We don't know what to do with this guy, you know. And so he's called upon by various members of his parish to handle these creatures of various kinds.
Yeah, it's lots of fun. Yeah. And like I said, it's a page-turner. It's written in a very entertaining and enjoyable way. It does sound from the description we talk about it like it is kind of like a, you know, fairy stories or something like that. But the book starts out with a sexual assault, so
yes.
It's not really a fairy tale book. It's darker than that. It's more intense.
Yeah, this is adult reading.
This is adult reading. Yeah. These are not fairy stories, really.
Right. Maybe one or two of the stories might be suitable for children, but this is written for adults.
Mm-hmm. So, Dennis, this book is lots of fun. This is one of many books that you've written. You also have written some books of poetry. And tell us a little bit about, you know, where you've been coming from.
Well,
for those that don't know, Dennis.
The original reason I got into writing, and I suppose it's the first part of the story is like most of people here in Iowa. You know, every time you go to school, you have to write. They want you to write. And even foreign languages. So you have to write in foreign languages. You know, there was a requirement that we had to take foreign languages in high school and also in college. And I kind of resisted that for many years. But everywhere I went, I had to write. I went into the Army, so I had to write reports and, you know, evaluations and, you know, various written pieces there. I got out. My first job was publicity for the Duluth, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, which meant I had to write news releases and deal with the news media, learn how to do radio, television, all that kind of stuff. So everywhere I went, you know, it seemed like I was, you know, the invisible hand again. You know, I didn't want to do all this writing, but
the universe wants you to write. Finally, you got the message?
Yeah, I finally got the message, and it was good to be able to do it, too. Mm-hmm. I came back. I spent a year in Vietnam and came back with the usual demons and a mild case of PTSD. And I found that creativity is really a great way to deal with your demons.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried a bunch of different creative arts.
Mm-hmm.
And they came and they went. And then I got into writing. And, you know, we have over 1 million words in our English language. I don't think I'm going to run out of those in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when I got into writing, I decided I would start out with poetry and learn how to do that and master some of the elements of poetry. And once I'd done that, I would go into writing short stories. And once I'd mastered the elements of short story, then I would go into novels. And what I wanted to do was bring the sensory information and the imagery of poetry into prose. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been trying to do. I've got I've published about 5 books of poetry, and I have these 2 books of short stories. I've got a novella and 4 novels in draft that I'm waiting to see if some publisher will pick up.
Mm-hmm. So you've finally given in to writing.
Yes.
You've let it take over.
Yes, Father Donahue has to give in to his fate. I have to give in to mine.
Are we going to see Father Donahue again, or is this his one-time appearance?
He might appear again. Mm-hmm. There are 12 stories in the book. And I was writing a 13th, you know, during the time this book was published. So mm-hmm. I didn't have it finished in time to get into the book. So I do have a 13th short story that I put out in a little chapbook. Mm-hmm. So you never know. There may be more.
You know, give us a teaser for your novel?
There's 4 novels, but I'm hoping will be published next is called The Assisi. And it's a novel, apocalyptic novel, that is 250 years in the future, right here in Iowa. And there's 250 years ago, there was a worldwide plague that came through and wiped out 90% of the world population. And people have been, the survivors have been pushed out of the cities because they're sources of the plague, and so they don't want to go back there. So we end up here in Iowa. We have several survivor groups, and those are the groups that kind of knew how to feed and clothe themselves without depending on modern, you know, corporate culture. And so there's an Amish group. There's basically farmers. There's a Quaker group, basically woodworkers. There's a monastery like they did in the medieval days, the Dark Ages. You know, the monks copy books and try to preserve knowledge. And there are 3 or 4 Indian tribes. Now, these tribes are much different than we have today because they also pulled in a lot of survivors. Hmm. So the culture is, you know, there's some Native American culture, some, you know, culture from, you know, the mainstream culture that survived in this group and was modified. And, you know, so you get the synthesis and then a new kind of culture.
Well, that's, you know, that's one of the things I like about this book, Winterset, too, that you're going to be releasing. It really is a story happening in Iowa, so it brings in a lot of the life of Iowa. It feels like home. It feels like the world we're living in right now. So.
Well, Iowa has been mentioned or featured in a number of science fiction books, and Jules Verne even mentioned Iowa in The Mysterious Island. You know, mm-hmm. that they've made so many movies about. At the very end of the island, it actually blows up and sinks at the end. And the colonists, you know, decide they're going to stay together. So with the money they have from the island, they buy this huge acreage in Iowa. In the territory of Iowa, this is Jules Verne's last couple of pages of the novel, because it so resembles the mountains and lakes of this island.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, Jules Verne never visited Iowa.
Obviously.
we're a little shy of mountains and lakes.
Mountains and lakes. That's great. Well, we have some lakes, but I don't know about the mountains. Anyway, the hills. So anyway, next Thursday, April 18th, you're invited to the book release. And please join us. You are invited. Everybody's invited. Like you said, there'll be some refreshments, and Dennis will be reading a little bit from his book. And I promise you, it will be very entertaining. I've been very entertained by the book. It's really fun to read it, and I'm going to look forward to finishing it. And so, again, join us. That's the 18th here at KHOI. Thank you for joining us, Dennis.
Thank you, ma'am. Always a pleasure.
On April 16th, that's next Tuesday, there will be an eye-opening experience occurring at the Ames City Council. There'll be an hour-long City Council public hearing on the 16th at 6 p.m. in the council chambers, and you're invited to come and listen. It'll be a forum on human trafficking in our area, the issue of human trafficking in Ames and central Iowa. So you're invited to come and listen and also to participate if you wish so and voice your own concerns. George Blitzos, chair of the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery, stopped by KHOI this week to record his personal invitation to you and give some explanation of what's happening and to encourage you to come out for this.
We are very happy to be headed to a city council public hearing on April 16th, 6 p.m. at council chambers for a one-hour discussion about human trafficking in Ames and what we are doing to fight human trafficking. We've been asking the Ames City Council for almost 2 years now to consider adopting an ordinance. A growing number of so-called massage businesses that are actually a ruse for prostitution and trafficking. We want to rescue the women in those facilities. We want law enforcement to be able to shut them down. And right now, it's very hard to do without having a local ordinance. Mm-hmm. So we have the opportunity, and I call on the people in Ames and all of Story County to come and listen or contribute to the discussion.
When you say we, who exactly are you talking about?
There's a coalition of local agencies led by the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery. That's the statewide group, which I have chaired for the last 3 years, chaired their board of directors. This is one of our big three statewide initiatives to reduce trafficking in Iowa. We have Access, YSS, Protecting Our Children, ISU Student Group Against Human Trafficking, several churches, including a number of the legitimate massage therapists. And we are headed to city council and hoping that we can convince them that we need more local control. And by the way, we've been asking for this for some time from city council. 3 months ago, they took a vote. David Martin had put forth a motion, it was seconded, to offer this public hearing. And it was a 3-3 split, 3 in favor, 3 opposed. They weren't even voting on an ordinance. They were voting on just hearing from the public. I was rather disappointed and shocked. Thankfully, the mayor stepped in, broke the tie, voted in favor, and that's what got it on their agenda for April the 16th.
Who will be presenting?
It's an open forum. People can just come to the podium and talk. All of the groups that I mentioned that are fighting human trafficking in Story County will be there. I believe our county attorney will be there to speak for an ordinance. I believe our sheriff will be there to speak for the ordinance. I think we'll have someone from Mary Greeley Medical Center who will speak for the ordinance, possibly some service clubs. We're hoping that there'll be a good cross-section.
George, what are the most important things to know about human trafficking?
It happens in Iowa. It's a growing problem. People think that it is something that happens only in third world countries or that it is something that just doesn't happen in rural areas. It's only in big urban centers, and that's completely wrong. In fact, rural areas and small towns are where trafficking often operates because they can be under the radar. One of the biggest trafficking rings that was broken up was being run out of a small town right near Iowa City. Almost 40 women were rescued, and 7 traffickers were arrested. 2 years ago, right here in Ames, we had several complaints from women reporting to the Ames Police Department that she was molested while getting a massage from a male at the mall in Ames. And then it happened a second time with a different woman. And then the police did finally go in. Man was arrested. For one thing, he did not even have a license to practice massage. No one checks right now to see if the people who have massage hanging on their door have licenses. The only thing that the state does is grant licenses. They don't come in to check. He was convicted of a sexual assault felony and is in prison. Connected to that illicit massage business, there was another business that was operating downtown, and we had complained about that business for some time. Police finally did go in, and 2 women were arrested. The 2 women in Ames were being trafficked. They were forced into prostitution. They were both living at the business. They were not allowed to leave. Their food was brought in. Their clothing was brought in. They weren't earning money. They were just getting a place to live. And to this day, no one knows who ran those businesses. A lot of these businesses are open and they have names on the lease. that are out of state or no one's ever met. That's another thing we hope an ordinance will take care of, is identifying who is renting this, who is running the business, who's the manager. They need to be held accountable. It's one of the most horrible crimes in the world. Nationwide, the estimate is that there are 9,000 illicit businesses operating in the United States right now, and it's growing every year. Their bodies are being used for people to get rich and to profit off of.
How are these women generally held in slavery?
Threat of violence, coercion.
If somebody wants to be on the lookout for this, what should they be looking for?
Human trafficking, prostitution can be found in hotels and motels, and we're trying to do something about that. Second to that would be, let's call them illicit massage businesses. These businesses are advertised on the underbelly of the internet. They advertise by showing photos or of scantily clothed women and inviting people to call and make appointments or actually connect online. And this is where they get their clients, who are buyers, who are Johns. You know, the massage businesses, they only looking for the people that connect with them on the internet. They're not people who are going to complain about it. These buyers of sex are always, almost always men, and that's what they're looking for. They may claim that they didn't know that these women were forced and that would have made a difference to them. But we have lots of examples of women who told them that they were forced to be there and asked for help and didn't get it. In fact, they got beaten. The problem is that it goes unrecognized. So signs to look for these businesses from the outside would be open all night, blinds or shades over their doors. You can't see inside. Finding them with their ads on the internet, and that takes a very clever person to be able to find where this is online. And what we need is an ordinance to make sure that our law enforcement people can go in and find out whenever they want, is everyone licensed, what is going on here, who owns it, so that they don't have to wait for a complaint.
What exactly is the ordinance that you're asking for?
About 2 years ago, the Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery and a lot of our allies went to the legislature because we saw how big this problem, illicit massage, had become. And we went to the legislature to ask for local control because nobody was given the authority to oversee these businesses or to check them out to see if they were licensed. Nobody knew who managed these businesses. They were all absent. So believe it or not, we got that signed. It was one of the last things that Governor Branstad signed, and he was very aware of the problem because we had talked to him about it. And this is at a time when the legislature was taking away local control, not giving local control. The first city to pass an ordinance was Johnston, Iowa, and they closed down two businesses. Since then, in the last 2 years, Altoona, Boone, Cedar Rapids, Clinton, Clive, Coralville, Davenport, Des Moines, Iowa City, Marion, Newton, Ottumwa, Pleasant Hill, Urbandale, and West Des Moines. Pretty much all of the major cities in central Iowa except Ames. What's happening is that as these businesses flee these cities that are regulating them, they frequently just go down the road. And it's putting us more at risk. So the ordinance would allow the city, authority figures designated by the city, to visit the business, identifying who the owner is, where they live. So you could have a owner of a massage business or a so-called masseuse who has a criminal background. They could even be a sex offender. Nobody knows. Right now, they don't do background checks. So that's one of the things that a lot of the ordinances are asking for is background checks. A number of them are putting a time. You can't be open at midnight to 5 in the morning. There's not much good that goes on during that time in a massage business. So each city has different regulations, requirements, but the key is to give law enforcement easy access. We've been asking Ames to take this up for 2 years, and we still don't have an ordinance.
I'm speaking with George Blitzos, who's head of the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery. George, as the founder of YSS, you've seen a lot of human problems. How did you end up dedicating yourself to this problem?
Well, I'm retired, and the day I retired, I was asked to be the chair of the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery. It's the first and only statewide volunteer agency that is dedicated completely to fighting human trafficking. So this is a volunteer job. I'm putting in a lot of time, but it's something I really believe in, and it is because people under 18 are the most vulnerable to being trafficked. I was very aware of it as CEO of YSS because YSS has been operating since the beginning. Well, we started as I was first runaway and homeless youth shelter. Back then, we knew that a number of runaways and homeless youth within a short amount of time after being on the streets were involved in sex in exchange for food and a place to live. Some older guy or a college student in some cases, or someone would take in especially the girls and then feed them and give them a place to crash. We really called it survival sex, but it wasn't a criminal operation. It wasn't a syndicate of traffickers. People weren't making a lot of money. They were just exploiting these vulnerable girls. Then I started to notice that this is showing signs that they're seeing a lot of men. They're telling us that someone is profiting. I remember talking to a girl who was in jail for prostitution, and this was back in, I think it was 1995, hearing what she had been through, and here she was going to prison for 2 years. She had started as a runaway and now was very much controlled by a trafficker who was earning a lot of money. And I realized, wow, this is not what it used to be. Started then to get more and more concerned about it. And the Network Against Human Trafficking was launched in 2006. And it was shortly thereafter I joined the board and was kind of the expert on runaway and homeless youth. With the internet, it has just exploded worldwide. Also, the thing that's driving it in a lot of other countries is the number of refugees and immigrants who are desperate. It's a worldwide explosion in trafficking and exploitation of people for their bodies and their work. And a lot of it is young people who are very vulnerable. So that is what got me involved. Then a particular client that was referred to us from the juvenile home had been charged with prostitution in Chicago, and she was only 14 years old, brought back to Iowa. Turned out she had been a runaway here in Iowa who was picked up by a trafficker at a Hy-Vee store. He had observed her trying to steal food, and he offered her a job as a model. And within a week, she was drugged, beaten, and was turning tricks in a hotel in Chicago under gunpoint. I mean, they aren't in the room with you, but they're down the hall. She was very fortunate to have been rescued, but the traffickers were not arrested, and she was sent back to Iowa charged with prostitution and went to the juvenile home. But fortunately for her, someone there recognized that she's not an offender. She's been exploited. So she came to YSS, and that is how I got involved. The first thing I did was when Brittany had turned her life around and was willing to talk about it publicly, is get Brittany to the legislature, make people aware. Brittany had a miracle happen. I mean, she just fell to the right foster parent who then adopted her and the right agency. And I'm really proud YSS took a lot of leadership back then when no one else in child welfare was even recognizing the problem. So when I retired from YSS, they asked me to be the statewide chair of the Network Against Human Trafficking. I'm very proud of the work that we've done since then. We now have a sticker to be put up in a bathroom, a women's bathroom in particular, that has the 800 easy to remember national hotline. And now we now have a 24/7 Iowa hotline. We have it in English, Chinese, and Spanish. And we're calling for volunteers. We'd also like them put in men's bathrooms. It's not only for the person being trafficked, it's there as a reminder. If you see something suspicious, call one of these numbers. And we're hoping to have an awareness enhanced by this. So anyone that would like to connect with us, just go to our website, tap on the connect button, and tell us that you would like to volunteer. Our website is iowanaht.org. Iowa, NAHT, the NAHT is Network Against Human Trafficking.org.
Tell us again when and where the forum will be and how exactly somebody can participate, either by learning or speaking.
Tuesday, April the 16th, 6 p.m. at City Hall, City Council Chambers. The Ames City Council is holding a public forum on human trafficking. It's a public forum. Anyone can speak for or against an ordinance. It's there for the public to voice their concerns, and we hope people will come.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour, but I'm going to hand over the reins to Mary Rankin. Ames and Iowa State University Sustainability Director is here, and she's with a pretty large crew.
We do.
Virtual and otherwise.
Absolutely.
Welcome back, Mary, for
Thank
your
you
regular
so much.
Segment. And you've got so much, you've got so many people, so much to do. I'm going to step aside and let you navigate this topic. You're going to be talking about the recent conference, right?
Yes, absolutely. And first of all, I would say Happy Earth Month.
Thank you.
How exciting. Always a pleasure to be on your show, Ursula. And you never should step aside. Join in whenever you want. We enjoy the conversations that you bring in. But yes, we are going to be talking about a conference that we actually did in March. And we've been on the radio before, and we've been talking about our 10-year celebration with the Live Green Initiative at Iowa State University. Celebratory months each month, highlighting a different facet of sustainability that we're excited about, that we've had the opportunity to be involved in and have accomplishments in with our great team at Iowa State. And March was Exploring Green. And so I'm going to bring Molly and Madeline up to the mics now to talk about their vision for what we did during March.
Good morning, everyone. This is Madeline. And yes, I'm one of the interns for the Office of Sustainability. And we celebrated Exploring Green by hosting a student conference on March 8th at Iowa State University in the Memorial Union. We had 11 different schools come, and we invited schools across the state. And we had Central College, DMAC, Drake, Grinnell, Iowa State, Luther, Mount Mercy, Simpson, University of Iowa, University of Northern Iowa, and Wartburg College all in attendance that day. And kind of the vision for the conference was to connect different students and staff and faculty across the state who have an interest in sustainability to collaborate and vision what the next 10 years across the state would look like in regards to sustainability initiatives and create a lasting effect that we could connect with each other for years to come.
Hello, everyone. I am Molly Breen. I'm another one of Mary's interns. And yeah, just to add on to what Maddie has said, we've actually been doing that with our lasting effect. We've created a Google Drive where we have a calendar, we have different shared documents we're able to use, and we have a Facebook group where we can keep each other up to date on different events, such as how everyone is celebrating Earth Month and many other fun things.
Thank you both. So yeah, it was a great day. As Molly and Madeline mentioned, we had 11 different schools represented. We had 80 different attendees, and we looked at things such as what are other schools doing. We envisioned different opportunities for the state of Iowa in sustainability. We talked through some case studies that different universities had represented there, and just did a whole lot of brainstorming and gathering together. And you know, I can talk a lot about it, we can talk a lot about it, but we actually have some representatives from some of the schools that were in attendance. And in the consideration of what we want to accomplish with this network, we wanted to bring them into the conversation today also to talk about why they were interested in this event, what was particularly relevant and beneficial from the event, and what were their primary takeaways and move forwards now in having this connection with the network. And so I want to first of all introduce from the University of Northern Iowa. Eric O'Brien is joining us this morning. Eric, how are you this morning? Talk to us about this experience with the conference.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Mary and Ursula. This is great. From my perspective, I was looking at this as a great opportunity to be able to get students from our university connected with other places. Oftentimes, I think they get insulated with the things that they're working on their own campus. It was great to see, for their perspective, other students having some of the same struggles that they may go through, and also be able to learn from some of those struggles and how other students overcame those at other institutions.
That is fabulous. Thank you so much, Eric. And so talk a little bit more about, after coming home, what sort of conversations, because you brought a number of students to the conference. What sort of conversations did you all have?
Well, yeah, we had six students that attended, and many of them were from our Student Sustainability Engagement Committee. So they're thinking about ways all the time of trying to engage our student body at UNI. So the biggest conversations we had on the way home, and we've also been having since, related to how we can utilize this project as the catalyst for bigger things on our campus. As you know, Mary, we've offered and we're excited to be able to host the event next year. A lot of the conversation has focused around the planning for next year's event, to be able to use this as a springboard to hopefully even be able to grow the conference to larger numbers and offer even a wider range of things for students to participate in the future.
Yeah, that's great. And yes, you sort of spoiled a little bit of my surprise there at the end, Eric.
I apologize.
No, it's okay. It's fantastic. And you should be the bearer of the surprise. Because when we were first looking at this event, we were very much considering that this would be a conference we're excited about hosting. We knew, based upon the amazing effort and time that Molly and Madeline put into it, that it couldn't be an annual thing that Iowa State could necessarily host. But then University of Northern Iowa, Eric, you all came to us and said, hey, we could look at hosting this next year. And so we're excited now that it looks like it could be an annual event, because the University of Iowa has actually said we will also host then the following year. So that's an exciting component of that. Thank you very much for that support, Eric. We also have Rachel Murtaugh, who is joining us from Mount Mercy.
I think what really drew us to the conference was the fact that it's very student-focused. I think we're finding on campuses that more and more student-driven initiatives are what really have a lasting impact. When you get groups of students showing their own agency and saying, yes, we want change on our campus, that's when the change really happens. And I was really excited. We had five young women join us for the conference. Only one of them was really involved with me and the sustainability office prior to the conference. And so now we're kind of hoping that after being exposed to what the possibilities are, we can continue the conversation with the other young ladies that joined us, and kind of inspiring them to take action within their different majors and also the clubs that they're involved with.
That's fantastic. That's exactly the intent, right? When we gathered on that Friday afternoon. So that's really exciting to hear. And Rachel and Eric, you both are sustainability staff within your different universities, correct? So Eric, you're director. Rachel, you also director of sustainability at Mount Mercy. Now I have a student from Iowa State attended the conference because she was very interested in the topic. So Carissa Moynet is with us. What were your takeaways from the conference?
Yeah. So hello, everybody. I'm Carissa Moyna, and I'm a junior in civil engineering at Iowa State. So the big takeaways was really, as a club, when you plan events, you really struggle. Time is a big thing for clubs and getting people as a college student. And so I wanted to see how we could really bring more people to our events and how we could connect more people across from different universities, how we can connect and communicate better between clubs and as leaders for sustainability. And so it was perfect. I got so many ideas and I was inspired. And really, just as a young person in sustainability in general, it was really empowering to move forward and know that we can keep our efforts going and we can keep going strong across Iowa. So yeah, so it was just an enjoyable experience all day long. And I look forward to hopefully going again next year.
Absolutely. And I know Eric looks forward to hosting us all as well. And really, as we look at a sustainable future and ensuring a sustainable future, it's so dependent upon that connection that we have with others that can make a difference. The Office of Sustainability has put together quite an extensive Earth Month calendar. Folks can go onto our website, livegreen.iastate.edu, and find, oh my goodness, I think we've got probably 20 or 30 pages of different events, not only on campus, but in our community related to celebrating this wonderful month. Many of them no charge, many of them philanthropic efforts to support different initiatives, economic, environmental, and social sustainability efforts in our community. We are actually doing a big Earth Day event. Molly, do you want to quickly give the time and date?
Yes. So we'll be celebrating Thursday, April 25th from 10 to 2. It'll be a big celebration, kind of wrapping up our 10-year celebration we've been doing all year. And we're very excited to have everyone there. We'll be having student organizations, yard games, giving out some cookies, snacks, beverages, reusable water bottles, all the fun stuff like that. A lot of way to earn prizes, and it should be a great event.
Fantastic. And I would just say also, Chris is sitting here. They're doing a fabulous composting workshop. So encourage folks to get on that Earth Month calendar, livegreen.iastate.edu. Check that out as well as a lot of others. And we look forward to seeing you and celebrating Earth Month.
Thank you, Mary. And thank you to all of the guests who came this morning. It's really exciting to hear what's happening. And this has been Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Remember, you can hear the show again at noon and 5 p.m. on Fridays at khoifm.org. Your theme song, as always, has been Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Shelley. Cynthia McClure has been our engineer. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.